Hey guys, as my 8th season of Interviews with the Haunting Masters comes to a close, I want to thank you all for the support that you've given me, and I want to wish you a happy holidays. Keep those reviews coming, those comments coming, helps me keep the podcast free. And the last few episodes of the season, it's dedicated to all the late season archery hunts, all those guys still out there grinding it out through the end of the year and into January. So we're going to be talking a lot about mule deer, coos deer, Arizona, New Mexico, some of the other states that have some of these late season hunts, and hope you enjoy it. We're going to jump into this next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. This week, we're going to be talking with Devin Leonard, and we're going to be talking about late season bow hunting, not bunch hunting, or the extended archery season, so as it's called in Utah. And we're going to talk about some tactics, some of the things that Devin has done in the past to kind of be successful and to get his name where it is now, synonymous with killing big bucks. So anyways, how you doing, Devin?
Doing good, John. Doing good. How about you?
I'm good, man. I'm just cramming in a bunch of podcasts today. I got like five. I just got off the phone with Dwayne Adams. Did a podcast on coos deer with him. And I'm just kind of squeezing a bunch in here before I leave for South Dakota. I'm going to go see if I like to go there during the rifle season. It's during the rut, but you can get archery tags over the counter.
So are you going to be hunting with your rifle or archery equipment?
Archery equipment. Yeah. So if rifle, you have to draw.
Oh, so gotcha.
Yeah. If you want to participate in the actual rifle hunt, you have to draw a rifle tag, but you can go get an over-the-counter archery tag.
Cool.
It's actually really not really an over-the-counter archery tag. It's a first-come, first-serve tag, but they're always tags.
So, there's always left. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be fun. You'll be out there in South Dakota, and I'll be up here hunting the front.
Yeah. That's kind of why we have you on. We want to talk a little bit about hunting the front, hunting that extended archery. Give me a little rundown about that season, a little information about the season.
Do you want to talk
what the rules are?
Yeah, do you want to talk specifically about the extended as a whole, or do you want to talk more about just the rut hunt, which is what a lot of people wait for?
I'd say let's talk about the extended as a whole, just because kind of what I'm doing with these next few podcasts before the end of the season or before the end of the year here is late season opportunities, you know? So let's take the extended as a whole, and then we'll back it back to the, hunting the rut in Utah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So the extended season here in Utah is actually pretty cool, because if you're able to draw a general deer tag, you're able to hunt for the first 3 weeks during the general season in whatever unit that is that you were able to draw. And then after the general season is over, you then have the extended season. And that extended season lasts all the way till the end of November. So you have quite a bit of time to get it done. And it runs along the mountain range that kind of falls right above Salt Lake City, and then down towards Bountiful. And there's a few other extended areas. But what's cool about some of the extended, and if these guys do their research, they'll be able to find it pretty easily, is that there's a portion of the extended unit that doesn't allow any rifle hunting. So all you can do is archery hunt it. Now, it does get quite a bit of pressure. It does have archery hunters from the third week of August till the end of November. So it does get a lot of pressure, but because you don't have muzzleloader hunters, you don't have the rifle hunters, you know, it gives these deer the opportunity to, you know, grow old, get mature, as long as they can beat out the archery hunters. So that's kind of where I've, you know, focused most of my time over the last, 14, 15 years or so.
Cool. Now, there don't you guys also have, and maybe that, maybe I'm thinking it's elk. Isn't there something that goes into December as well?
Yeah. So the elk, the extended elk along the Wasatch Front as well, it'll go till December 15th. And I believe you can actually even shoot a doe up to December 15th. But I'm not 100% sure on that. But I know at one point that's the way it was.
And that's,
yeah,
that's,
but the elk are pretty cool, right? Too, because, you know, you can actually get into big elk along the extended. It is tough that if you don't know where to go, I mean, guys can go up and not see elk at all. But if you know where to go and you do your research and you're not familiar with the front, you get on Google and you try and find some areas. But when that snow flies and these elk start to move down and they get into their winter range spots, and if you can locate that, I mean, you can find some pretty good bulls to go after.
Yeah, that's cool. I've thought about it several times going up there to try that out, because I've had success here in Arizona in the late elk season, actually, because just hunt them like deer, you know, spot them up.
Right. Yeah. And, oh yeah.
You know, not relying on my calling or lack of calling capabilities.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm more of a mule deer guy, so I'll typically try and tag out on a mule deer. And then if I do that, then I'll, you know, start hunting elk. But typically, I mean, I'm, you know, pushing it to the last minute and then maybe hunt the elk, you know, from December 1st to the 15th.
There you go. Cool. So you mentioned that some of these areas are pretty popular. You know, it's obviously it's a popular spot for Salt Lake guys because it's right there.
Right.
You know, it's a locals hunt for sure. What are some of the things that you do to get away, you know, or use the pressure to your advantage? I don't know. So it's like, I'm one of those guys that I'll use pressure to my advantage.
Right.
So I get away from them. But what are some of the things you do to deal with the extra added?
Well, I guess the obvious, you know, answer would be, you know, you can find these trails that, you know, there's very few guys that will hike up these trails, and you can go further in and you can take the steeper trail and you can do that to get away. But, and that's one way to get away from these guys, because there are areas that I don't even like hunting, that I don't even like hiking to, because it is way back in there and it's hard for me to be able to, you know, go back and forth and hunt for 3 days, go to back to work for a day or two, and then go back up and hunt for 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. And that's typically how I'll do it in the beginning of the season. So yeah, there are areas like that where you can get away and be the only one up there, especially after the opening weekend. But again, I mean, you know, that's a ways in there, and it's hard for me to do that. So for the guys that, so in order to, if you're not able to get away from the hunters and you're going to have to find a way to deal with the pressure, what I've done is, you know, I'm always trying to, so because I've spent time up there, I have an idea of where these bucks are going to be pushed. Mm-hmm. And because I've spent, you know, the last 15, 16 years on this unit, I have an idea of, you know, you're going to get a bunch of guys coming up one canyon and the deer are going to come up and over the saddle, over into the dark timber. So if you have the time to figure out what these deer are going to do when opening weekend arrives, then you can kind of play it that way. And that's actually what we did this last August. And we were probably just, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes too late getting in position. And that there was a giant 3-point that came up and over the saddle. He got spooked down into the bottom across the canyon. Then he actually ended up getting shot that same day by another hunter. Mm. But so you can kind of like play that. But I think that takes time in order to do that. But I think the most important thing to understand about the front is that, I mean, I was up there on Saturday and it looked like it was opening weekend because of the rut. It was a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And there were, you know, trucks galore at each and every trailhead. So, you know, I have found that I just don't let the hunters, you know, push me away or get me discouraged, just because I've seen the way that these deer react. And because of all the hikers, the hunters, the bikers, these deer, especially the ones that may be living close to a trail or around a trail. They know how to work around the hunters, the bikers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of my biggest bucks that I've killed, I was able to actually find him from the road. And you would have thought that there would have been 100 guys on this buck, but for some reason he was just in this spot that nobody really ever looked at. So, you know, I kind of like the saying that, you know, big bucks live where you find them, because I've been able to glass a 200-inch buck that from the road, and it was probably like an hour and 20-minute hike to get there. So I don't know. I mean, there is pressure, and then the best way to deal with the pressure, to answer your question directly, is to hunt during the week. And the weekend, opening weekend, is obviously going to get a bunch of pressure that next weekend. But if you can find the time to actually hunt during the middle of the week, that's going to be your best bet.
Yeah, no, for sure. I try to plan all my hunts away from weekends, unless it's a limited draw. Then, you know, obviously you go when you got to go. But and Fish and Game hopefully regulates that for you, meaning not too many tags. But no, I love hunting middle of the week. Wednesday's my favorite day. Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week.
Yeah.
They've gotten calmed down from the last weekend. You know, it's kind of a Wednesday, Thursday's usually been excellent performers for me.
Yeah, my buddies and I actually, we had that same conversation when we were up there on opening weekend on how good Wednesday was going to be, because – you know, Tuesday it was like everybody was gone. We didn't see any more hunters. And then we just knew that the deer were going to have a chance to settle down. And then Wednesday, like you said, can be very productive. And then, you know, Friday people start showing back up. But
yeah,
during the week.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about mule deer behavior during this time. What are some of the things that you can count on? About how the deer are acting, you know, obviously they're chasing does and whatnot, but what are some of the things that you can use to your advantage to score a buck during this period, this time?
And are you talking about like during the rut, like right now?
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, for me, what I try and do is locate different groups of does, and I want to be able to glass these does, the different groups of does from one vantage point. And that way I can always be, because the does are going to be super consistent, right? These does during this time of year are going to typically be doing the same thing. So now what I'm waiting for is I'm waiting for that buck to make his rounds, and hopefully I can catch him, you know, showing up to these does to check them out at the right time. Mm-hmm. Because it's already kind of started here in Utah, where the rut started, where, you know, we had seen a big buck that we had been after all season, and he also wintered, or he also was in this area during the rut last year. So a few days ago, he was down towards this group of does that we had been watching, and then he disappeared. And because of the behavior that I believe that these deer do, I just felt like eventually he would be back. And then sure enough, you know, what was it, 2 days ago? He made his way back to those does, and he kind of just cruised through that morning, and then he was gone by the evening hunt. And I believe why that is because in that group of 8 to 10 does, there wasn't a hot doe. So I imagine he probably went on to that next group. And I don't know where that next group is, but I kind of have an idea. But from where he went, I wasn't able to glass that next group of does.
Right.
But during this time, I want to be able to know, okay, I want to go hike up, get on my vantage point, and I want to be able to glass 3 or 4 different groups. I'm going to watch those groups and hope that there's a shooter buck in there. And that's kind of the way that I've played the rut in the past.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. That's, you know, not far off from, you know, what I've been doing my whole life. Really just looking for does during a rut. It's matter of fact, you're the third guy that I've had on for these late season rut hunts. And everybody has the same consensus, you know, find the does and the bucks are going to show up. I've listening to what you were just saying and being in the right position at the right time, and kind of you reminded me of something that I found worked for me a couple times. I don't always use it as a tactic, but if you find a big group of does, and let's say like you're kind of like shadowing them, and you stay on the I guess the downwind side of them, and off far enough, and if you're working with a partner and you know that the bucks are continually coming to check these does, you know, to see if they're hot or not, I've often used buck bomb or like an aerosol type mule deer scent, and I've sprayed that. So like excuse me, I missed these. Excuse me, thank you. All right. So I've gotten in between a group of does and bucks, and I've basically sprayed that and had the bucks pull into the group of does, and basically they come across me because they're focused on going to where the does are because they know where the does are at, and they're thinking that there's a hot doe in there or whatever, and I've been able to take two bucks that way down here in Arizona during the rut. So like, yeah, just kind of, you know, thinking outside a box and thinking about what they're looking for and what they're searching for this time of year. Obviously they're looking for a piece of ass, and giving them that option, you know, or making them think they're going to get that. And,
You know, I think that a lot of these whitetail strategies, and I haven't really been using them that long on mule deer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like whitetail are probably a little bit more receptive towards the whitetail strategies as far as, you know, maybe using scent, rattling them in, calling them in with some sort of like doe bleat to tell the bucks that, you know, hey, I'm ready, I'm in heat. But I will say I have used these strategies that the whitetail guys will use probably the last, this will be my third season trying it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've seen it where I've scared a buck off, I've scared the does off, but then I've also seen it where I've been able to actually call the bucks in. So I don't know if it's just because that one buck was more receptive and the other buck wasn't, or maybe I did a wrong call or whatnot. But what I will say is that some of these whitetail strategies that these guys use has worked for me on occasion for mule deer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but yeah, I mean, that's just,
don't discount them for sure. I got a good friend of mine, Billy Babish, out here, and he pretty much kills a mule deer or a whitetail coos buck here in Arizona every year for as long as I've known him, and way longer than that. And he uses his grunt tube a lot, and it works. And I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I never even think to use that stuff. I've tried the rattling thing. I've had a lot of success with predator calls, like fawn and distress calls and stuff like that, but there's a very specific time and place to use it. But the only thing that I have noticed, you mentioned the bleat, like a doe bleat. I've had that work for me, and it's more to seal the deal than, you know, to get them to come respond from a ways off or whatever. It's like they're on the other side of bushes or whatever. I don't have a clear shot. I hit the doe bleat. They come around to see what it is and make a shot type scenario. So, but yeah, no, I know a lot of guys that kind of use some of the whitetail, quote unquote, whitetail tactics, you know, rattling or grunting and calling rather. I mean, they're all deer. They all communicate. They all have a very similar social, you know, social behavioral stuff, so it's not too far-fetched to see that why that would work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now the scent, I haven't actually tried that, but
it's called Muley Bomb.
It's I need that.
Well, they're ester scent. It's hard to get because they only make very few. Matter of fact, I'm talking to you, I'm reminding myself to order a couple before December gets here. A couple of the things I've done with that is I know there's a bunch of does in the area, but I haven't started really seeing bucks showing up yet because, you know, they're a lot of times does will occupy an area all year long and there's no bucks in there at all. And then come the rut, boom, the bucks are there. I've actually like driven around in washes and stuff and sprayed this stuff from my ATV, you know, just to get scent in the area. And then, oh, in the next couple of days, I start seeing bucks showing up, you know?
Right, right.
So, yeah, it works. That the sexual drive is strong in mule deer. So, it'll bring them from miles and miles away if they catch the right whiff.
Right. Yeah.
What are some of the, I'm going to use the word habitat, but I mean, the front is pretty much all very similar because it's all, no, it's not really. I guess it goes from pretty far down low and goes up really, really high. Where are you, you know, what kind of zone, like what kind of habitat zone, what kind of country are you looking for deer?
I would say, you know, it really just depends because these deer right now, I mean, I've seen it where we've watched a buck all season long and before the snow even pushes him down, he's coming down to 4,700 feet and chasing does in the scrub oak and the sagebrush. And then there's deer that, they'll stay up in the high country until there's snow up to their chest. Oh, yes. So as far as habitat, I really think these deer are going to be, you know, all the way from 4,600 feet in the scrub oak, all the way up to the aspens and the pine trees and hanging out up there. I think it just kind of really depends on the deer, on when they move. And some are going to stay up high and some have already moved to their winter range. I actually live on what is and used to be a really hot winter range. And now that there's been some houses there, but the deer still winter there. And even though we haven't received a ton of snow, matter of fact, there's probably only a couple inches up in the high country right now, mm-hmm. and most of it has melted, I've noticed that there's a ton of deer that have already moved down to what will be their winter range.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of just depends on habitat. It's like, would you rather, do you want to hunt down low in the scrub oak where it's going to be a little bit warmer, or do you want to go hunt up a little bit higher in the high country where I'm hunting up there only because I'm super familiar with that area and these bucks that I believe had stayed and hopefully they're still up there. I'm hoping that I can run into one of those bucks that we hunted during August, September, October. Gotcha. So as far as the habitat, what I'm looking for is habitat that's going to be conducive to archery hunting. And it's not always that way, but I want to, if I'm looking for a new area and I'm not, you know, I don't have a big buck pegged, I want to go hunt somewhere that if I do find a big buck, it's going to be conducive to, you know, stalking in on him.
Okay.
So for an example, there's one hillside that we're actually hunting right now that it holds a lot of deer, but because of the snow, it's on a west facing hillside, but because the snow is crunchy, I don't really want to spend time watching that group of does, even though I will, but I'm not going to spend all my time over there because I know if I do find a big buck in there, it's going to be super crunchy. Wow. And the odds of me sneaking in on him and, you know, spawn stock are going to be limited. Now I can get close enough, set up 100, 120 yards away, and hopefully he comes my way. But that's just not as conducive as maybe like a south-facing face where I know there's another group of does that always hang there, and I know that these bucks are going to swing by, hopefully, and if it's not today, maybe it's tomorrow or the next day. So I want to be able to take all those things into account. Even if I do see a big buck, am I going to be able to go after him? And or maybe there's a hillside that is, you know, has a bunch of quakies, and although quakies right now are actually a really good time because they do hide in there, they do bed, and I can see through these quakies right now, so I can really glass them and see them bedded. But the idea is wherever you're going to plan on going, make sure that you're spending your time somewhere that if you do find that big buck you want to go after, that it's going to be conducive to a good spawn stock so you don't waste your time.
No, that's, you know, that's huge. That's super important. It sounds so obvious, but you'd be surprised how, you know, many times I'll be out with people and they're glassing or whatever, and I'm like, why are you looking over there?
Yeah.
Like, well, because we see big bucks over there. I'm like, well, can you kill them over there?
Yeah.
No, you can't. So, yeah, it's like a lot of times I find myself looking in places where I want bucks to be, because if I find them there, I got their card, you know?
Right. And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's – I'm glad you brought that up, because that's – I was actually thinking about that the other day when I was trying to remember who I was speaking with, and that thought crossed my mind. And now you just kind of basically re-said the same thing, and it's smart. Do you have a slight chance of being able to kill a big buck somewhere else that's not conducive? Yeah, but smart people play the odds.
Or, right, you
know,
yeah.
Experienced guys play the odds.
And so you also have to keep in mind that, you know, maybe the conditions are good. So, like, I can't wait until this hillside that I can't hunt right now gets a new layer of snow, or maybe it melts off a little bit more, because it always does hold, you know, 10 to 15 does in this hillside. And what's cool about it is they'll rut in there and they're going to bed. And once they bed in there and the conditions are good, I mean, that place right there is perfect for a spawn stock, because you can have somebody glassing for you and then you can see through the quakies. They love to be in there because they have the cover. But yeah, I mean, so that area right now isn't conducive, but eventually the conditions will change to where it will be conducive, and then I can kind of play that side of the hill versus maybe the other hill has gotten too much pressure, but not a lot of guys on this other side because it's just a little deeper in. It's hard to glass if you're not in the right spot, and it's just doesn't get a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Another great point without saying it, being adaptable.
Yeah.
Sliding.
Yeah, for sure.
Sliding where you need to be. So
yeah.
Is there any like little tricks or anything that you can share with the, you know, a couple of tricks that you could share with the listeners that, you know, can help them seal the deal?
You know, one trick that, I don't know if it's really a trick, but something that when you're up in the high country, and this is something that's maybe that I've paid more attention to over the last couple of years, is hunting a pass. And finding these passes that the deer frequent quite often. And it seems so obvious, and I've heard it, and I've just kind of ignored it. I think we all know that, you know, deer are going to pass, I mean, kind of like a funnel, right, where they're kind of forced to go through the lower part of the saddle. And I think we've all known that. I haven't really paid that much attention to it besides the last 2-3 years. But what I've really noticed this year is that I've seen a lot of deer. And then when I go to check these passes out, there's a good trail that goes through these passes. And same thing goes for this time of year too. If you can find these, you know, if you're just by yourself, the passes and the funnels and the saddles, I think are a really good way to hunt just because it's more of a natural pathway for these deer. And again, like I said, I think we all know that, but maybe a trick could be, is just pay more attention to that. Maybe when you get up on the hill, look for that pass and then go see if there's a trail there. And if there is, okay, now maybe if you're by yourself and you don't have a spotter, you can say, okay, hey, you know what? This is going to be a good place to sit down. But since I paid more attention to that, and it shouldn't surprise me, but it does, it surprises me on how often the deer actually funnel through, you know, the saddles and the passes and the pinch points and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, deer are all about conserving energy and they're going to take the path of least resistance. Now, it's not that they can't go up and over.
Right.
Why would they when they can take a much easier route? I try to do the same thing when I'm hiking. I'm finding game trails, and it might seem like the long way around, but it's a lot easier walking, or, you know, not as steep or broken up or whatever. But no, I mean, that's actually, believe it or not, that's a real whitetail way of thinking of things, because that's what you do. You look for the best transition, the best funnels, the best, you know, travel route to intercept a deer. So, no, I love that. That's a great thing that I feel like a lot of Western guys overlook. And those people that have figured it out kind of had a lot of success with it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, now I'm thinking about another, you know, trick. And again, it just seems so obvious. But for me, I always have to remind myself that when we're making a game plan to go in after a buck, I think one of the most important things is you don't want to be chasing a buck to wherever he's headed, whether he's going to his bedding area, whether he's going to his feeding area. Mm-hmm. You know, you always want to be able to kind of intercept him. And I know it seems so obvious, but I have to always remind myself to, hey, when you're planning your spawn stock, it might seem a little bit easier to go this way, but if you go this way, odds are that you're going to be chasing him into his bedding area. Mm-hmm. So you might want to go the longer way so he actually comes to you. And you can't always guess that, but I think if you really try and sit down and strategize and say, hey, you know, these deer are hanging out here and he may just be feeding or he may be rutting does and you may not know which way he's going, but it's important that you take the time to kind of analyze, you know, what the terrain is and where you think he's going to bed and the direction that he's going to go. But we've been hunting these deer for so long that we kind of have an idea. Now, obviously we don't always get it correct and, you know, we end up chasing them into their bedding area or whatnot. But if you really, you know, assess the situation, look at the terrain before you go and say, okay, which way do I think he's going to go? And then kind of try and intercept, and that way he's meeting you instead of you chasing him in. Cause I mean, I remember when I was hunting a buck that I named Radic, I hunted him for 2 years. And the first year, I always thought I could chase him into his bedding area because he would feed for so long. And I hunted him for 30-odd days, and I kept doing the same thing. I just kept thinking to myself, okay, I got to come from the thick, quaky patch, and I may not know exactly where he's going to go into, but that second year, I finally realized, okay, I need to quit chasing him in because it was always like I was getting 60, 70 yards from him, but the brush was too tall or, you know, one of the smaller bucks were blocking his vitals, and that actually happened one time. So then eventually I changed up my strategy to, you know, have him come to me. And it was on the exact same hillside, exact same spot where I had many encounters with him chasing him. But finally I cut him off, and that's when I realized, okay, Devin, you need to really pay attention and make sure that when you go in on a stalk that you're doing your best to make sure that you analyze the situation and cut them off instead of chase them in.
Smart. Super smart. What would you say what are the three biggest factors or the three biggest contributing factors that have led to your success over the years?
Time in the field is, I would say, because I mean my last big buck I killed, I spent 2 years, 60 days on him.
Jesus.
So, you know, it's like if I was that master hunter, I probably could have killed him that first year, but it took me that full year to realize, hey, Devin, you need to quit chasing him and cut him off. But the other tough thing with him, and the reason why I just spent so many days, is I would see him one out of 7 to 10 days. So if you didn't make the perfect stock, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to find him for another 7 to 10 days.
Oh, jeez.
So, and then, you know, when I killed my other big buck, I hunted him for 26 straight days. So I've spent a lot of time. And I feel like for me, that's what has given me the advantage is time in the field. And right now, I don't have a ton of time. I don't have as much time as I did last year. Mm-hmm. But I'm finding a way to get up and glass in the mornings before I go to work. And then if I find that big buck I want to go after, I'll hurry, go down to work for a few hours, and then come back up and hunt the evening hunt.
Right.
So, yeah, definitely time is one of the biggest factors for me anyway.
Cool. Well, awesome, man. Well, I hope you get your big boy this year.
Yeah. Well, let me say this, John, because I think this is pretty important too, is that there's a group of buddies that we work together. And this is probably the main factor on why, you know, we've been able to connect on some really big bucks on the front, is because instead of, you know, us finding a giant or finding a big buck and then, you know, we just make a game plan for all of us to go in on it, we're going to take turns and we're going to work together to where, okay, you know what, you know, maybe I went in on the buck last time, so this time I'm going to spot for him while he goes in. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of work together, which will then give us that advantage. So somebody can keep an eye on the buck. The hunter can go in and feel confident that the buck's still there. He hasn't moved. He hasn't moved on to a different group of does. But besides the time, I would say, well, not even besides the time, I would say the biggest factor is that we've got a group of friends that we work together and we're going to glass for each other, where, you know, I see, you know, some other guys that maybe instead of glassing for them, they're just going to, you know, one's going to go one way, the other's going to go the other way. And that way works too. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when it comes to finding a big buck, because you don't always see a big buck, and when you do, you want to give yourself the best chance to connect. I feel like if you can create a group of friends that are just as excited if you kill a big buck as if mm-hmm. they did, then, you know, that's going to be important, because again, that's probably the biggest factor, is having that group of friends that are willing to do that and take turns.
No, that's huge actually. Yeah. Very good point. It takes a certain somebody, you know, to kind of have that mentality that, you know, they'll feel just as accomplished if they get, you know, if you shoot it as if they do. You know, that collaboration's important. I've had a lot of good friends over the years, you know, that I've been able to hunt with, and it's made all the difference in the world for both of us, you know. So cool. You got anything else planned for the year after you're done? I think you told me a while back you might be going to Mexico or coming to Arizona or something like that.
Yeah, so yeah, I'll spend the rest of November here hunting the rut, and then December 2nd I'll be heading to Mexico to hunt coos deer and muley. Most of our time will be spent on a ranch that has a few coos deer, but it's mostly known for its big mule deer. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully I can make it out to Arizona with Hunter and hunt coos deer for a little bit, and then in January my buddies and I will head back out to Mexico during the prime rut for the ranch that we'll be hunting. And hopefully I can connect out there with my bow again.
Nice, man. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Well, cool.
Where can our listeners find out more about you?
So I am on Facebook. I don't get on there much. I do most of my stuff on Instagram. So Instagram would probably be the best place, and that's just Devin Leonard _. That's Devin, then Leonard, Leonard _. And then, yeah, check me out on Instagram, and hopefully some of these your listeners will make their way out to the front. And another big thing for the front, and especially if you haven't done it before, you're not familiar with the area, I would say get up high, glass, find those does, and then start hunting those does and keep an eye on them. Because even if there's not a buck with that group, that just means that, you know, the odds of a buck showing up are even that much greater. If there isn't one then there should be right. one that next day or the next. So,
right. Cool. Awesome, man. Well, thank you for taking the time and shedding some light on that hunt for us and sharing some of your knowledge. I wish you luck for the rest of the season. I hope you get that big buck over there in Utah and have some success on the coos deer hunts and muley hunts in Mexico and Arizona.
Cool, John. I appreciate it. Thanks for the invite. I appreciate that, and good luck to you.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Okay. We'll see you.
Bye.